Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway here from the studios of WAMC in Albany. Those of you around the country who are listening, it's a wonderful thing to have you here. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, sir. And Caitlin Brown is here, professor of journalism at St. Rose, College of St. Rose, that is. You know what's great about having you here, Caitlin?
What, Rex?
Other than the fact that you're going to be brilliant and say, you know, smart things and all that kind of thing, is that usually when Alan doesn't know how to get back at me, he will say, well, I'm the only one in the room with a PhD. Finally, we have somebody else in the room with a PhD, so we can actually contend appropriately.
Well, but it's got to hurt, doesn't it, Rex?
So except for when people say that PhD means something differently, we're talking about the use of language.
Higher and deeper.
Oh, higher and deeper. Yeah. There we go. So Caitlin Brown is here, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. We have a letter from Richard in Albany. We always invite our listeners to write to media@wamc.org and tell us what they're thinking. It says, Dear Panel of the Media Project, that would be us, we three, being that we live in the digital age now, and most people get the news through some type of electronic media, are newspapers still called newspapers, or has a new term emerged? I don't know. Is there something else to call a newspaper?
Well, we do know that the New York Times, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, which you often do. The New York Times has more readers digitally than they have on paper, don't they?
I believe that's true now, yes. And then so same thing is true, actually, of my company, Hearst Corp. We're a primarily digital corporation now. Isn't that interesting?
And in fact, wasn't there that group that called themselves Digital First, that corporation?
Yes.
They didn't do too good, I don't think. So now the writer has a point. Mm-hmm. How can you call it a newspaper if, in fact, everybody's reading it online? It's not paper.
Well,
what?
I think that even the public still would say that looking to a newspaper is where they get credibility. So the word in itself indicates there's credibility there. That's my take on it. Losing that word, we lose the meaning behind it.
I don't agree with you. Now, why don't I agree with you? I don't know. I just know it would be a better program if I don't agree with you. So therefore, but I think your point is very well taken. Actually.
Well, I think long and hard about this question. I'm sure Rex does even more because he's at a newspaper. But in my lifetime in the newspapers, I recognize it was primarily a print product, but still trying to get the public to understand that a newspaper delivers a particular kind of content that is vetted and investigated and researched and reported. You're not going to get from another platform.
I'm sure there are words that, you know, we talk about when we say call me on something, we'll sometimes say dial. You know, nobody's had a dial on their phone for 20 years, right?
That's a very good point.
So there are some words that just survive longer than their physical reality. But the fact of the matter is, print circulation continues to decline. The latest report is that weekday print circulation of newspapers in the United States decreased by 10% last year, Sunday circulation down 9%. Digital has been roughly steady over the last year. So what has happened to a lot of digital, not just newspaper, but a lot of digital sites, is that overall digital growth is not skyrocketing as much as it was because, of course, everybody is already digital. So,
yeah, Rex, I don't agree with you.
He also paid no attention whatever to what I was just saying, right? You're getting it. This is only Caitlin's second time on the show, so she's still learning the dynamic here. It's a good thing, by which I mean it's terrible.
But I'm surprised by the intro. I'm surprised by what you've just said, to be honest with you, because here we've all sort of been led to believe that the digital, if you looked at it graph-wise, was going up through the sky, and you're saying it held its own.
But on a few major sites, like this is what's so exciting about what's going on at the New York Times and the Washington Post, where they are known for their great investigative reporting on the biggest issue of the time, really, the biggest story, I should say, of right now, which is what's going on with the Trump administration. Their digital sales
are growing like
crazy. 300,000 new digital subscribers in the first quarter of this year alone at the New York Times.
But so what's interesting about the Washington Post is here comes Jeff Bezos, right? And he puts all this money in and they hire all kinds of new people. They really staff it up and it's doing better, which is interesting because where I live in the Berkshires of Massachusetts, a group of fairly well-heeled people come together and they buy the newspaper, the Berkshire Eagle, which had had a fairly distinguished history, as we often say, Rex. They got a Pulitzer in 1954 or something like that for an editorial.
Exactly.
But they're re-employing all of the bureaus which have fallen fallow and they're putting in all people. And the paper is superbly better. And I'm hearing it from people who used to just, as a way of life, curse the Eagle, that they really think it's great and it's incredibly improved and therefore people will want to do it. So maybe...
There's the question. And therefore people want to do it. You mean you think their circulation's going to grow?
Yes.
Do you really?
Huh. I can hear the sneer in your voice,
well,
which is that you don't think so,
we
right?
We could all make better products by spending more. The question is it going to pay off? Are people going to be there?
I don't know if people are going to be there, but I think we need to deliver more journalism, better journalism, and get journalism out into the areas where journalism isn't currently being done. This proposal in the New Jersey Assembly and Senate, which is looking...
That's cool.
I know. It's very interesting. So there's this new...
Remind me again.
...proposal to allocate $20 million out of the funding that was collected in New Jersey from sale of public television licenses. That money would be used to start a training ground, among other things, for journalists, sort of like an AmeriCorps for journalists, according to a couple of the stories.
And you like this?
I do like this idea.
I don't like it.
It's a great idea. I've had students who've done AmeriCorps.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Alan's against training. You know, he's a former professor.
Here's
what
I'm against.
I'm
against government money for training.
Ah, well, so you're against funding for the state university system, too?
I knew what you were going to come up with.
Well, it's good that you think of these things when you walk in.
I knew what you were going to come up with, but no. But the truth is, see, I love the idea that we're going to go towards a new methodology of funding newspapers. One of them may be what we're seeing in Great Barrington or in the Berkshires, which is a group of rich guys who come along and say, we have so much money that we're going to invest some in this newspaper business.
That's one solution.
Bezos comes along. He says the same thing at the Washington Post. Then there's the third idea, which is the public radio idea, you know, that people come along and give money. Each of them gives something to keep their newspaper honest and going and not owned by somebody who might have disparate ideas from
them. I think that's a good idea, too. I mean, those are good, valid ideas, but I don't think you should look down your nose, Dr. Shartok.
Speak of looking down their nose, your voice connotes the whole thing.
The effort in New Jersey to have a public media literacy campaign, that's what these millions of dollars go to, and this AmeriCorps for journalists. If you can train young people to be thoughtful journalists, and then in exchange, they commit to at least 2 years to covering local news in areas that are now underserved, you know, there are many areas that don't have local journalism anymore.
Hey, they do that with doctors.
Well, there you go. So why are you in favor of for doctors, but not for truth-telling?
You know why, Rex Smith. You know why very
See, he's
well.
Stalling so he can figure out a good answer.
No. No, you know why, because every time a politician gets his dirty, greedy hands, you know, into funding anything, sooner or later they're going to come back and say, you've misbehaved, you press, you national public radio, you WAMC, so therefore we're going to take your money away from you. You know they'll do it.
Well, when those public radio stations were sold, the licenses were sold, and this money accrued to the state of New Jersey, this is a legislator's idea to try to fill that gap in some respects because so many communities in New Jersey are underserved, as they are across the country. And we know this from what we've heard in coverage of the last election and the eventual arrival of something characterized as fake news, that if we get reporters out in the field, out in rural areas, going to town board meetings, going to school board meetings, the communities then are aware of what's happening in their communities and will become more engaged citizens and will be paid attention to by the media.
No, I can't argue that with you. But what I can argue is that when we see the Corporation for Public Broadcasting being zeroed out in the Trump so-called budget that he's put forward, it's because he doesn't like public broadcasting. He doesn't like that way of doing it. And I'm saying to you, Professor, that if in fact, and that was heartfelt.
Yes, professor. Yeah.
And like then, two chefs. Like, hey, chef, what are you doing? Thank you, chef. Yes.
No, that I am not.
So you do understand, right? That I'm concerned about the fact that when certain people like Trump take over, they want to kill it. Yep. And in fact, he wanted to change the libel laws so it'd be easier for him with all his money to go out and scare people and sue them.
Well, you want to change libel laws, too. You've talked about that often. You want to make it harder for media to defend against lawsuits, you've said. So well, there we go.
For the sake of argument, I have taken the con, you know, on that one, because I've seen some newspapers do despicable things. And I've never quite understood why, if you so-called have injected yourself into the public debate, into the public eye, that you cannot sue, even if you're wildly defamed. And I think many people listening to this radio show will agree with that.
Well, if you're defamed, you can sue.
Yeah, now technically, go get yourself a lawyer. Go show that actual malice was being committed and all the rest of it.
Seems fair to me. That's what the courts
Well, of course it seems fair to you because you run a newspaper. Everybody knows that.
But if you are a public person and you have made the decision to be out there in the public, then you are subject to more name-calling than the average Joe.
That's ridiculous.
Or Jane.
Let me tell you why, Professor. Because if, in fact, somebody says something to me about my parentage or my parents had me illegally or whatever you want to say it, and you want to go back, why should the fact that I'm in the public eye not allow me to sue them?
That's a bad example because an ordinary
citizen. You always got to be absurd to make the point.
Well, no, but an average citizen can't sue if somebody calls them, you know, a bad name either. You collect in a libel suit if you've been defamed and if you've had injury as a result.
Yeah, monetary
damage. So how are you injured by somebody saying, Alan, your parentage is
Alan was illegitimate, therefore, I don't like illegitimate people, so I'm not going to give any money to public radio. Would that do it?
No.
For you? Why not?
No.
And I collect all of those remarks, and I put them together, I put them in a lawsuit.
You're a public person, so.
I don't get that. So you keep retreating to that. I don't know why.
I'm asserting, not retreating.
Okay. Okay.
You know what we should do is someday we should have a libel expert here to explain these things to you, Alan, so that you can sort
so
of
so condescending
be...
of you, Rex, to explain
you
these
think?
Things to you.
Speaking of the First Amendment, well, we're going on to another topic here. By the way, this is a media project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith. We're here from Albany. There's an outfit based at the Columbia Journalism School called the First Amendment Institute, the Knight First Amendment Institute, because their biggest chunk of funding came from the wonderful Knight Foundation, which gives a lot of money to journalism, which probably Alan would oppose because the foundation could take the money away if they don't like what's going on, too.
Sure.
So anyway, so we should only get money from, but advertisers could take the money away if they don't like it, too. So that's not good.
That's right.
So could underwriters. They could take it away. So we should just all work for free, all of us journalists. Make this an
alienationary
organization.
No, you make a good point, though, Rex. It is a matter of the integrity of the news organization if they say, okay, Ira Fussfeld quite frequently brings up the case of somebody who may have owned an automobile agency and did something bad, and then they cancel their and it was a big account, and they may cancel their advertising.
A huge account.
So now you have to decide what kind of backbone you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've done it here, I can guarantee you that.
Absolutely. And you're still doing it, by the way, even though the government is threatening to take away its subsidy of your radio station. You're still doing it, which is why I think Kaylin's idea here of the AmeriCorps for Journalists in New Jersey is still a good one, notwithstanding your
I like the idea,
threat.
But not by the government.
Well, I like the idea. If it's not going to come from
Will you two stop ganging up?
Anyway, the Knight First Amendment Center is threatening legal action against President Trump, not because of the fact that he's said nasty things about them, because they are journalists, but because he has blocked some of his critics on Twitter. So, you know, the president tweets and people respond astonishingly. He's got, I don't know, he's have 30 million followers on Twitter, something like
indeed,
that.
Indeed.
It's huge.
And some of them have criticized him. And the result was that his account blocked those critics. And the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia is choosing to and has written a letter to the president asking him or his minions to please unblock those individuals, not just the two that are mentioned in this letter, but also any other individuals who have been blocked from the president's account. And the argument is that it flies in the face of the First Amendment. Twitter is a public forum. This is a government account, even if it says real, the rest of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. The Supreme Court has created this notion of designated public forums, places set aside for the government for expressive activities, parks, sidewalks, areas that are traditionally open to political speech and debate. And what this lawsuit is saying is that Twitter is one such place, and the president can't block people who are critical of him.
Do you ever block anybody from your account, Rex?
Personally, I haven't, but we have blocked people from commenting on our Facebook on blogs, but I don't know that we've done that on Twitter. I'll have to check.
This Nice Center, just to clarify, this Nice Center letter to the president is just saying it may consider filing a lawsuit, that it's not been filed yet. Right now, they're asking for the blocking to cease and that individuals are permitted to follow the president and trying to find other navigation, other way to get to the president's account.
And Kaylee, what's your position on this? What do you think?
If that has been made open, if the president's Twitter account is there for the public, he is the president and he does not have the right to block those individuals. He has, in fact, created an open invitation for anyone to follow him on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that his account is violating the First Amendment if it chooses to block individuals from saying
cool.
what they want to say about it.
Who pays for his account, do we know?
I'm registered free on my Twitter account, and I have blocked people who follow me, companies. I don't want selling stuff on my account, so it's very easy to go in there and block. Because
I guess I have done that. Yeah. So there you go.
I don't want to sell cars on my Twitter account.
Yeah.
I like my car, but I don't.
So that's interesting.
I'm not going to defend Trump because I really don't like him very much, but I find it an interesting intellectual question as to whether or not he should be allowed to do some blocking in the same way we do.
Nope. I agree. It is a great question. It's a super question that Twitter has become so de rigueur that anyone would choose to use it. It gets used regularly. I think the public was very surprised when they saw how much this current president was using Twitter. But it is because of his initiative that the First Amendment applies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, you know, we need to talk just for a moment about the response of the Trump administration to the intelligence contractor who leaked this information to The Intercept. The Intercept being a digital-only news place that is created by Glenn Greenwald. And here is what is stunning. There are a couple of things stunning about the response to this 25-year-old contractor named Reality Winner. Isn't that an amazing name, Reality Winner?
It is amazing.
Is that a born, given name?
That's all I've seen reported.
Yeah. Reality Lee Winner. The Intercept, which focuses on national security issues, published a document, which is a report from the National Security Agency, and an hour later, this woman was arrested, a contractor working in Georgia, right?
Yes, Augusta.
Was arrested for being the person who leaked. It is a stunning situation. The first thing that is concerning to me is how the journalists let this happen. And I think it was sort of almost...
Somebody messed up.
Investigative malfeasance, yeah. What they did was they published the document right online there. And it was visible from looking at the document that there had been a fold in it, therefore indicating that it was a copy of a printed version of the report. The NSA was able to check who exactly had printed versions of the report, 6 people, and only one of those people in a quick check of phone records had been in touch with The Intercept.
Okay, so now, on the one hand, people like Barack Obama and others have been quite ticked off about having stuff that was in the national interest. They thought not be leaked, and they wanted to go after the leakers. Presidents don't like that. On the other hand, you really can't have an educated population unless they know what's going on. And so, in my opinion, and I do say this, God bless them, the leakers are basically saying, this is information the American people have to know. Maybe the Iran-Contra, it may be the Pentagon Papers, it may be any of that stuff. I think it's so important because otherwise you just get PAP, government-manufactured PAP. So I think it's a case-by-case thing. There are sometimes you publish something, it could really kill somebody.
I'd like to know what motivated Reality Winner. I'm interested in that. But clearly she was trying to protect herself by the fact that she printed it out and sent it in the mail without a name attached to it. She may not have been aware of how easily it would have been to track her down. As Rex said, there was the wrinkled document that was shared by the media. But why was The Intercept doing that? Why did they share that document? I mean, we have an obligation in journalism to protect our sources if we've agreed to some level of anonymity, which we should give sparingly and infrequently.
So, but, Caitlin, if you were on your old newspaper, The Times Union, and they said, okay, tell us or go to jail, would you have gone to jail?
We have had reporters who have previously packed their toothbrush when they went off to court.
Bless your heart, Rex, but...
had promised a source that I would not reveal their name, yes, I would keep that promise. Now, when I was at the paper, I was not a mother, so it might change now. Or then again, maybe I would again. Yeah. But yeah, so the dynamic has changed for me. But at the time, sure, I would have. But I could count on one hand, in the years of reporting I did, how many times I used an anonymous source, because it is to be used extremely carefully and only under certain circumstances. At every instance, we should try to name our sources. This clearly was not that instance, if we knew that person's name.
Yeah, it was a mistake. Actually, Bart Gellman, who reported on national security matters for the Washington Post, said, I haven't seen a mistake this consequential before. So what they should have done is, what you're asking is, they should have tried to verify through independent channels the information in the document rather than posting the document online. There's no need to, I understand the verisimilitude. They want to show something to the people.
Pentagon papers.
Say, here's the document.
Right.
But, you know, that needs to be outweighed by protecting sources. The good news about this is that news organizations are going to think long and hard before they make this kind of mistake in the future.
But I'd also like to say there's a sort of false equivalency that's going on here, and we all know it. So here Donald Trump is really screwing it all up and being a terrible president and really acting very, very unwisely. So the Republicans, instead of having to defend his nonsense, are all going after the leakers as being equivalent harm to what the president of the United States is doing. And we all know it. So at the hearings and everything else, we're going to hear about that stuff as if it's an equal thing to what Trump is doing, killing health care in this country, going after international partners and doing all that stuff, and say, but who leaked it?
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. I think it's a dodge. What do you call that when you're saying...
Shiny object.
Yeah, shiny object. Exactly. It's a shiny object.
Angel dust.
We're all crows, you know? We're just poking around in the for the shiny object that we can next find here. So as we get down to the last couple of minutes of the show, we wanted to talk about language here. You know,
by the way, we just had a fun drive.
Did you?
And there must have been 1,000 comments, maybe I'm over-exaggerating, saying the Media Project should be an hour.
Really? It could run it.
That's a lot of homework.
That's what I always say. Well, homework for some.
For some.
Because I've often said anyone can prepare.
You can. Only some do, however. So, you know, what can you do? So John Oliver was upset. John Oliver's terrific, you know. He's a comedian who's in his comic role, does a lot of truth-telling. But he makes a great point. The media in the U.S., after the attacks in London, the bridge attacks on civilians, said a couple of places Britain is under siege, or London is reeling from the attacks. And he is saying, no, as a matter of fact, it's not under siege. People are going about their life, and it's a point of pride for Brits, you know, that they have the stiff upper lip. And I think we are sometimes sloppy in our language, right?
I agree. We are sloppy in our language and our choice. In the Oliver piece, where he demonstrated through examples with all these news clips of how often the words reeling and siege were used, show that it's cavalier the way language has been used in the media. And we have an obligation more now than ever before to be very careful in our word choice. It matters. It makes a difference. It has an influence. This we know from how the president uses his Twitter account, that the words that he's choosing to use are having detrimental effects on our international relations. It is not a good use of language there, but journalists have an obligation above all else, and each of us, to be careful in how we're using language.
And you, of course, are a wonderful professor, and that's what you teach your students, and that's very good. But if you're sitting at the New York POST or some other place, you know, you say, okay, what will hawk the papers, what will get people to read it, and you go in the devilish direction you've indicated.
The danger is that since we have a president who is looser with language than any politician we've ever known.
Sure, and a bit of a bully, and that encourages bullying.
It changes the standard for all of us, and that's a dangerous thing. We have to be understated, if anything. Anyway, we've run out of time.
Because this program should be an hour.
What can you do? Kalen Brown, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith. We are The Media Project, and we thank you for joining us. Hope to see you next week.
Publishers of such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such...